and welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. We come your way every Saturday, 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time, and we stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com. We also archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. So we encourage you to check out past programs, including this program, once it has aired, and you will have an opportunity to listen and re-listen and re-listen and share it with your friends, send it on to them in whatever method, whether you want to burn it onto a CD or send the file to somebody, assuming their email can handle the size. Nonetheless, we are here every Saturday, and we talk with different folks who have different ideas about different things in terms of the same thing, new paradigms, new ways of living, new ways of making your dreams come true. And, well, of course, there is no exception with any of these programs. They're all that way. And today we're going to be talking I almost want to put it in the context. I'm surprised that the word treasure wasn't incorporated in the title of the book. But the book that we're going to be talking about and its author, the book is called The Map. Now, I say treasure because if you think about it and you get a map and you see where X is and you try to get there using this map, X is a treasure. X is your dream, shall we say, passion that you have for something. And so I like the concept of the map. There's a lot that we need to know about maps, about how to read them, about how to navigate through them, and how to understand the information that's sitting there right on the page. It's not just a bunch of squiggly lines. And if it's a topographical map, you know, the rises and falls of the hills, that's important. You need to know the legend. There's a legend that goes on with every map. So those are the kinds of things that you need to know about. We also need to know about who put the map together. And in this case, the interesting thing is, though, the book, The Map, is written by Colette Baron-Reed, who is my guest, and I want to welcome you to our program. How are you?
Thank you. I'm good. I'm good. I'm listening to you. I'm thinking, this is fascinating. A legend. I didn't put that in my book, but hey.
Well, but there is a lot to a map, and you do sort of have that in there. But this map, though the book was written by you, the map that we're talking about, in a manner of speaking, each of us has our own. Isn't that basically what you're getting to?
Absolutely. The map came from, for me, something that when I first started doing readings 22 years ago, because I've been making my living as an intuitive counselor for 22 years, I didn't like the word psychic. So I found myself being really, you know, I came from an academic background. I went to law school, but I just had this ability to see into people's stories. And I believe that our stories are stories of continuity. And so, you know, people tend to think that things happen separated from others, but I really believe everything is like a web that comes together at certain meeting points. And anyway, so when people say, well, what do you do? And I think, you know, I'm like a spiritual cartographer. So I said, you know, really, I'm drawing a map of your life. I'm showing you where you've been, where you are now, and where you're going. But nobody knew what cartographer meant most of the time. So, but I filed that, and I thought to myself, you know, I've worked with over 33,000 individuals in the past 22 years now, and every time I talk with somebody, and I tell them their story, by the way,
mm-hmm.
But the story is, it can be shown as a journey through various landscapes, and the idea of the map and landscapes, I was also really, really important to me. Given that, I mean, I can talk about that a little bit later. I don't want to talk the entire time, but it's the idea of topography was what you brought up, which I thought was interesting when you said, you know, there's peaks and valleys, and when you look at a topographical map, you can see, you know, these are the rise and the fall, and here are the rivers and the streams, and you see the different levels. It's not so flat. It's not two-dimensional and flat.
Right. That's one of the things that always struck me. Whenever I would watch science fiction shows and two ships would come into space, come together in space, and they couldn't pass each other. And I'm going, you don't get the concept of three dimensions here. You can go up, down, left, right. And I thought, but see, we can, even on Earth, even walking, there is that three-dimensional aspect.
Yep.
And that you can go over the mountain, you can go around it, or if you want to take the time, and you have the equipment, the tools, you can go through it. That's your choice. But when we're talking about these maps and finding the magic and meaning in the story of your life, those of you who are listening, what is the first step that you take with someone to help to create, if you will, or intuit their map. And I would agree with you, too, on that, the word psychic. I tend to stay away from that more and more and use the word intuitive or an intuit, if you will, because it just – I think it says a little bit more. It's not just someone who's trying to tell you your future. It's not a fortune teller. And I think the word psychic has sort of turned into that.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I mean, there's a stereotype that I've tried to avoid. But, you know, interestingly enough, I decided to own that language after my struggle for years and writing about it in the books, too, about my struggle with the language. And I just thought, you know what, if I'm going to change the stereotype, I'm not going to be afraid of the word. Although I also believe that it's a word that is, because it's been used in a certain way over time, it no longer serves its true purpose, which is just to say pertaining to the soul. But
yeah.
But here's the thing. I want to go back to the book and the map. Mm-hmm. When you asked me about how do I work with people, I just certified 22 intuitive coaches in the Envision process that this book is based on. And the Envision process is a form of active imagination and voice dialogue that I have kind of drawn from other people. I've had a lot of influences to create this work. And the first part of the work, it's three questions. It's based on three questions where you engage your internal vision, you gaze inwardly, and you allow your subconscious or your soul or your higher self, whatever you want to call it, to show you a landscape or of pictures and images, because the subconscious and the soul doesn't speak English, it speaks pictures. That's the evocative nature of and the poetic nature of the symbolism of how the world speaks to us.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first question is, where are you? And one of my favorite authors, Joseph Campbell, spoke about the hero's journey, and there's so many authors have written about the archetype of the hero and the hero of a thousand faces and the different archetypal contracts that we would have with various personas. And so I asked the question, well, you know, if the hero has a thousand faces and we are the hero, and because it is about universal archetypes, and we are on a journey, would we not also have to pass through on that journey a thousand universal archetypal landscapes?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we look outside of ourselves instead of constantly looking at, gazing at our navels, which I really think that's part of our problem, our society is our great narcissism. So.
Well, and the navel has now become an outward extension through all of our electronic devices.
Correct.
You know, and people are texting constantly, and I'm sitting there going, is your life really that important that I need to know about it every minute of every day? Really?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't want to be cruel or anything, but I'm thinking you could be spending your time pursuing your passions rather, and I can't believe someone has a passion for texting, but be that as it may.
Well, people have addictions to texting.
Addictions, yes.
I think that passion is compulsion, is turns into compulsion with social networking. Although I will say this, that I don't agree with you in that it's all bad, because I think networking is a wonderful, and it's right now, it's part of our evolution in that mm-hmm. we are actually training our brains, but we haven't caught up to it yet, which is why we're all so screwed up. So, but technology allows us to speak, but I get it. I agree with you, too. It's like that we actually, through this idea that we're connecting more, we're actually disconnecting more at the same time. So we have mm-hmm. to be careful. There's a downside, a shadow to all of these great advances that every time in our human evolution, any of these big advances have come, there's always been a shadow of it. But So if we talk about the landscape as a description of our thoughts, feelings, and beliefs, and that, by the way, the environment word came up. I'm a total environmentalist. I'm all about nature. I love nature. I love animals. My father was in part of Environment Canada. He spoke about solar power, windmill power in the 60s. He thought he was crazy, electric cars, you know, but he predicted all this. My dad was an amazing Renaissance man. But so I've always thought about what can I learn from the environment, and I've been studying, shamanism and indigenous divination systems, etc. I'm thinking, you know, this is all about what speaks to us through natural phenomena. So what if, so when Dr. Bruce Lipton wrote his book, The Biology of Belief, he and I had a great conversation about that. You know, I wanted him to tell me more about how the environment of the cell dictates the health of it, not the genetics of it. So, you know, we were talking about the word environment, and that was when I said, well, couldn't we describe, you know, our beliefs and thoughts as in real environmental terms, like using that the natural environment. And it was like, well, why not? So I read all these books on eco-psychology and spiritual ecology and eco, I have no idea, you know, like, and it was so hard. And I thought, well, why don't I just describe my thoughts, feelings, and beliefs as an environmental landscape that represents those things and then see if that works. And so really, you know, it was kind of like this, let's go inward and look at ourselves through this lens. And what I found by accident was that I indeed immediately went into the place of the observer witness and neutralized, it neutralized those feelings. I was able to observe them from a very, very different perspective. And so consequently, that led my work. You know, I kind of like went down the rabbit hole another few twists and wanted to ask that question. I went, well, let's go there. And you know, so then the book was written over 3 years because I had workshopped this with these intensives in Sedona, Arizona. I did 13 of them where I led people through the process of asking these three questions. Where are you? When are you? And who are you listening to? And I saw people's lives transform after those weekends. And hence, here came the book. In as much as the book is needs to be done, if you read it superficially, you will not get what it's trying to show you. If you just scratch the surface of the book, it may appear that I'm actually trivializing, you know, the different characterizations. But it's really, these are archetypes that if you're willing to spend some time and do the book, and actually do the exercise in the book, you will see just the depth of it when you do it. Anyway, I think I've digressed, but go on.
No, another question. No. You're doing just fine. And the thing that I find fascinating is how I think I first became introduced to maps in general, just as a tool. A wonderful Stephen Wright, a comedian, a great joke that he told once was he actually went out and bought a map that was 1-to-1 scale. And it was really hard to fold. The one question that you asked of the three, where are you? All I have to do is look at the map and I find the X where it says you are here and I know where I am. Right. It's that simple.
You know how many people don't know where they are?
Well, they don't know where or when.
Or when, yeah. Exactly.
But I also, the one part that I wanted to touch upon a little bit was who we listen to. I came up with this wonderful little theory, if you will, or what have you, and I would share this with people that there is somebody that you are associated with, and you see them, you know, you're with them all the time. You talk with them, or you have some level of connection with them. You're almost around 24/7, and then there are those people, and I just threw this out as a figure because I don't really have any studies to prove this, but. Then there are these other people that you connect with that you might see 5 minutes once a week, and you put more weight into what they say, what they think, and what they do than you do that one person that you are with 24/7. I says, who is that one person you're with 24/7? Well, it's you. And so you need to almost shut off the outside world. From time to time, it's like you said, you know, you got back to nature, very much an environmentalist. I happen to live in an area of the Central Coast here in Santa Barbara area where we live in a beautifully isolated and secluded area off the beaten path.
Santa Barbara.
Yeah. And a matter of fact, my mother said once to me when she came to visit, she said, yeah, you need this. You need this place so that you can clear your head a little bit. I was born and raised in Phoenix, and I know where Sedona is, and I've been there many times. I know that there are still aspects of that area that are very beautiful, but it's also become very commercial, too. But you find those places. You find those spots, if you will, wherever you live. And you sit and you be quiet. And that is something that I'm finding really interesting, is more and more people, you included, are telling us we need to in order for us to center, we need to reconnect, and maybe in some instances connect for the first time, with nature, with the natural world. Set the cell phone and the iPhone and the smart this and that device. Send those aside for just a little while. There's nothing wrong with them, but just set them aside for a little while. Turn off all the Wi-Fi. And just sit and then, of course, the phrase is, and just be, you know, what does that mean? So that aspect of listening, who are we listening to, I think takes us back to the other two questions, where and when. And you're talking about when you speak of when, are you speaking of past, present, or future?
Well, if you're not now, you're some when else, right?
Wonderful phrase.
Yeah, so I asked the question again. You know, I was also interested in Eckhart Tolle's work, and I was thinking, you know, again, I really think my work is just it's been influenced by so many different people. It's even though it's an original way to look at a lot of things that people know about already. But you know, I have a lot of people that I have been interested in, and Eckhart Tolle's work, The Power of Now, was very difficult for me to get around. I found practicing The Power of Now easier, and I always think about that because now that I started thinking about, you know, where am I? Am I going too quickly in my own mind? Because my mind can race. I have that capacity to not sit still in my own thoughts. So I'm consciously mindful of, you know, am I in the now or am I anticipating the future? Am I either for an expectation of some power that's going to be bestowed upon me, or I'm talking about just not me in general, me, mm-hmm. meaning you, me, everybody, you know, that when I would arrive at this perfect destination that everything would be good, or, you know, or what is more typical now, especially if you look at the news, that we're anticipating something horrific,
yeah.
that might happen any day now. You know, so you're not now, you're not centered in the present at all. And then there's, of course, resentments of the past and nostalgia for the good old days that you think that were, and you've completely redesigned a past from a different lens. So this is really a caution about, you know, about staying as present as you can and creating the reality that you really want to have in the now by responding to what's in front of you. As opposed to reacting to it. Now, that's easier said than done.
It seems
but it's
that
a creative way to rethink it.
It does seem, though, that all of these wonderful things that we come up with, whether we've written a book and gone on seminar tours or speaking engagements, it always seems that that's the case. It's easier said than done.
No, I know. I mean, I one of the things that I really believe enlightenment is all about how knowing, shedding the light on so much of the shadow that we realize just how flawed we are, and so we have to make peace with that and make the best of it. I mean, that's my view of enlightenment. And, you know, and I want to walk my talk, and mm-hmm. I really believe that, you know, you've got to have your feet on the ground and recognize that there's going to be cracks in the foundation. And I've never met anybody in the circuit in which I work, you know, that there are other healers and teachers and spiritual leaders, etc., other than the Dalai Lama, who's the most humble guy on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody's flawed.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so it's like, you know, we all have stuff. We all have our stuff. And we're all works in progress.
Yeah.
And it isn't easy. And I think part of the problem with the New Age movement is that we've been, you know, it's this quick fix stuff. Like, oh, yeah, law of attraction, just wiggle your nose, you're going to get it. And if something bad happens, ooh, you manifested that. It's just so... You know, the whole idea that life could be so only happy, joyous, and free is a load of horse crap.
and quite honestly, I've heard it put this way, that in spite of the struggles that I have with the whole concept of duality, which, you know, it's like I can't ignore the fact that it does exist because
uh-huh.
I deal with it all the time. And so it just seems as though, you know, we do struggle, we do, but see, yeah. The thing is if you didn't have the duality, you couldn't appreciate. For example, we just went through a bit of a heat wave here in Santa Barbara. Now,
uh-huh.
You know better than I do, having grown up in Phoenix like I did, what we had here was nothing by comparison to what they get in Phoenix. Because I lived when they had the hottest day on record, 122 in the shade, back in 1990. So I know what that was like. Here, we hit 89. You know, it's like if I was in Phoenix, I'd be getting my parka at 89. But here, it was 89, and I was sweating, and I'm going, oh, I can't believe it's so hot. But now it's cooled back down. But the only thing that I was really able to tell myself during that period was, this is temporary. It does not go on for the rest of my life. It will cool back down. We will get rain. I mean, you know, so from the standpoint of when we hit those walls of challenge – as opposed to those periods of joy, happiness, and excitement that we think we'd like to have all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's about the only way that I'm able to sometimes view it as I'm going through it, saying, this is temporary.
Mm-hmm.
Calm down, relax, get centered. I wanted to ask you about this story that each of us has. Part of what we do here is we try to bring out your story. When you talk about the magic and meaning of the story, there are those, and I'm one of them, who would sit here and say, you know, if my life was a reality show and they were following me around, I wouldn't watch it. That's not quite exactly what you're talking about. How does one put the magic and meaning into one's story?
Well, here's the thing. People have a tendency to go through their lives without any self-evaluation or any recognition that of the synchronicities in their lives, so of the healings that they've had, the spiritual awakenings that they've had, or in fact, looking at your life through a different lens can provide those things for you too. You have those aha moments. So those are those kind of things. The magic and meaning is to recognize that, you know, that I get people to realize that even the points of their suffering has meaning. That because people have a tendency to go, that was a bad thing, that was a good thing, I felt good here, I felt bad here, but you don't recognize that that was the greatest mulch in the garden. You know, so it's really about revisiting your life, because really it's about the past, about mm-hmm. taking a look at some of the paths that you've already tread, and to see, you know, that you've actually accumulated some incredible stuff along the way. But many of us are so future-focused or so stressed, they don't realize that the story that's unfolded has actually had great value. And once you restore value to something,
mm-hmm.
Then you restore meaning to it. Then you can change it. You can shift also where you've been by looking at it through a different lens.
Yeah.
So it's really about unearthing some of the things that you've buried or that you think are useless, or that you're ashamed of, or that, you know, or even the things that you thought were of one value, and mm-hmm. you really find out later that it was something else, and there's some greater humility there. So life becomes much more magical when you see that there is this invisible hand that at some point has come in, and you don't know why certain things have happened. You're going, wow, yeah, that really did happen, because we forget those moments.
Now, we're going to continue on in the program, but there are those who want to distance themselves from those bad experiences as they judge them. They would like to actually remove them, but it's like pulling on a thread of your shirt or blouse or what have you. It starts to unravel, and you can't. You cannot.
You can't.
Everything that you've experienced has made you who you are at this moment.
And you have to honor all of it, because I always say you're as sick as your secrets. You know, if you're hiding from yourself, if you want to disown any parts of yourself, you refuse those things, those are the things that are going to run your show. And those are the things that are going to ask for some kind of, they are the rapacious creditors that come and ask for payment. So, you know, I really believe that we need to make peace. It's just like what we're all going through right now, our whole social systems, our economic systems, everything is happening. And I think we have to look with a strong eye and without judgment, you know, with more of a discernment and a compassion at ourselves that we haven't been able to do up to this point, to say, we need to change. We need a different way of doing things.
And when we come back, we're going to talk more about that here on Tell Me Your Story. My guest, Colette Baron-Reed, author of The Map. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay right where you are. And this is Tell Me Your Story. I am Richard Dugan, your host, and we are talking with Colette Baron-Reed, author of The Map, Finding the Magic and Meaning in the Story of Your Life. Kind of appropriate for Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World here on the program. You know that on this is not the day, okay? It's the day before the day that everybody has been talking about. And I heard this, it was an interesting observation, Colette. 10 years ago, on 9/11 when the tragedy happened. There was a great unification of sorts of the American people. And they had experienced this horrific event, and then they moved forward. And yet, and you had mentioned in our last segment together that, you know, we're going through this economic upheaval and social upheaval and all of the different institutions and structure infrastructures of our society are beginning to show their age and decay and break down and so forth. And so new things need to come up. And yet we are having more trouble today handling those elements. And I'm thinking that the reason, and have you elaborate on this, but my observation is that the reason why we're having more trouble with the current events of today and not able to get over that hump, if you will, as opposed to 9/11, 2001, is because that was an instant in time, whereas this has been going on for years.
Mm-hmm.
How does that play into the map?
Oh, well, it's a repetitive landscape is how it plays into the map. Here we are again. You know, and we keep revisiting the same places over and over again because we haven't made peace with them.
Mm.
And that's why. So whenever you're invited back to the same landscape and you're saying, here I am again, am I here again? You know, we're going back to the Crusades, for crying out loud, right?
Yeah.
Now.
Well, that's what came to mind.
When you think about what's going on with us in terms of, you know, the whole Islamic fundamentalism, even though Islam itself is a very peaceful, beautiful, beautiful religion,
mm-hmm.
as is Christianity, but Christianity can also be as equally as violent and fundamentalist. So we have the worst of the two, you know, at odds again, just like the Crusades.
Yeah.
You know, so what's the difference? We haven't changed at all. How long ago was that? 14th century? I'm probably way off on that timing. But, you know, so you know, and just on a level of you know, when one developed nation and has more than the other, and when the ideologies are different, et cetera, I mean, there's a lack of cohesion, and we recognize that is true. But I don't have an answer. All I know is that we need to change.
I remember the morning of the initial event 10 years ago. I'm sitting there. I get a phone call asking me if I knew what was going on. I says, what are you talking about? You know, and so turn on CNN. And so I did. And I'm watching these events unfold. And the only thing that I could verbalize to my wife and myself was, we have to handle this different. There's something not right about this, and we have to handle this differently. There's, you know, and I can't, I don't claim to be intuitive or clairvoyant or psychic, but I'm watching this thing, and even for that instant as the observer, I verbalized it. I said, we have to handle this differently. There's something not right here. And all of a sudden, you started hearing the commentators starting to play the blame game. Well, who could it have been that did these things? And they start throwing out
mass destruction, the whole nine yards.
Yeah, and then the term that was used, and it started being used, and I'm going, no, that's not the right term. They would talk about the war on terror.
Yeah.
The war on an emotion? We've gone to war
against
an emotion.
Well, they made it worse because terror became the word we heard.
Yeah.
We heard war and we heard terror. We didn't hear the
like, ism,
the alleviation of, you know, like like the growing into peace. No, I mean, and listen, I mean, I can't imagine the desire for retaliation. I watched it from Canada. I'm Canadian. Watched it from my TV, and I thought it was a television show. I didn't think it was real.
My first thought was, my gosh, Hollywood,
Hollywood,
what a job.
I know, like, wow, those are amazing effects.
Yeah.
And then you realize that all those people, and just the thought of the children that were left behind, and the families, and the people who died, but you know what? This is like, and I what would it be like for me if one of my relatives had been killed, or my husband? I would want to retaliate. I would. But would that be the right thing?
Right.
You know, is it that we have to flex a muscle to prove that we're bigger and better than, when in fact two or three people of these sleeper cells or whatever they were managed to, I don't know how many people there were involved, but managed to just, you know, to bring a country to its knees.
And again, I you and I are both sort of in the same camp here in that, you know, we don't want to sit here and start trying to, you know, parse this thing out and pass judgment and take
a
position.
Oh God, I haven't got a clue. I just know that it affected me and it made me upset, and I'm,
yeah.
I cried for days, and you know, and I feel, and now it's 10 years later, and this is this weekend, and it is a time for us to remember. And
yeah.
would those people that died, what would they want us to do? You know,
yeah.
Like what would they want for the legacy? Would, you know, these are the kind of things that I can't answer. Who
yeah.
knows? I'm not a politician. I don't know. I'm Canadian. We don't really have guns up there anyway. So, you know,
well, like, the thing that came to my mind also was one of Jesus' statements, mm-hmm.
Turn the other cheek.
It's yeah. like, okay, how does that apply here? And I'm not going to.
How do you do that?
Yeah, how do you do that, and when do you
yeah.
do it? You know, is it all the time, or is it only when someone actually slaps you on the face? Very interesting stuff. Let's get back, because these kinds of events do create our maps.
They are indelibly etched. They become a landscape that we have collectively visited.
Yeah.
We have collectively gone to this place together, you know, and it was a collective experience. If you know anything about the Princeton University, the PEAR project, where they had these eggs, EGG machines posted all over the world, that they actually measured a measurable change in the electromagnetism the day prior to the event, that there was something in the collective psyche that knew that it was galvanizing to experience something.
You're talking about the HeartMath group?
It's the PEAR people.
Yeah.
I don't know if the HeartMath was involved, but it's like HeartMath.
Yeah, because I've had them on the program. We talked about the machines that they're putting up all around the world, and of course they've even done the same kind of
maybe it is look. Them that did it in conjunction with Princeton.
Yeah.
But so we have collectively been changed by this one experience.
But go ahead.
No, and so I just think it's so important that, you know, we honor the heart piece of that this weekend. And if we do want to do things differently, what will that mean? And
yeah.
It was really weird because I had the psychic twins on my, these two amazing women on my radio show. And they had predicted, I think they said something on The View, because they definitely predicted Hurricane Irene, and they said that it wouldn't be as devastating as Katrina, but it was coming. And they also said that there would be a terrorist attack on Washington and on New York at the anniversary of September the 11th this weekend, that they believed. And I had actually seen something. I got very I don't do world events. That's not my thing. But I had a real strong connection that there would be. I just got this weird flash that Obama's administration would prevent something from Yemen or whatever. But, you know, it's like now they're saying, you know, why would anybody want to do that? It's like, well, what's the point? Why do they hate us so much? It's like I sit there going, like, why? What is it? And that, again, we're just talking about this.
Neither of us is sitting here trying to pass judgment or take specific positions. We're actually kind of putting this out there and just trying to understand it. And this is probably one of the few programs that we've actually talked more about current events than on any other program. We usually don't. We stray away from them only because
I never talk about this.
Yeah. But this program apparently has just kind of brought it out because of the times,
yeah.
and that's fine. Usually that's what's appropriate for this particular period. But now we want to get back to talking about magic and meaning in our life and our life story and the map and how these kinds of events can be the catalyst towards something greater that we never knew even existed until this kind of these kinds of events or challenges come up in our lives.
You know, I know what when I look at these kind of events, you know, that the compassion, humility, we see things like hearing a story. I mean, like I said, I don't ever talk about current events because it's not my job to have an opinion on those things. That's not what I do. You know, I am another human being on this planet looking for an answer and listening to what other people are saying about it. You know, and for me, that the terrain is for me the finding magic in something like this means that it's going to compel me to hopefully compel others to be more conscious about how they treat each other you know, how fair they are and how willing they are to share, you know, and it unfortunately, these horrible things galvanize us to want to protect each other and be more in community. And so there's some really good things that come out of these really horrible things, too.
I just watched a movie the other day, the one that I hadn't seen since, I think it was the late 70s. And at that time, this was the kind of movie I was into. I just finished watching a 2-hour and 45-minute, I did not know it was that long, The Towering Inferno. with Paul Newman and Steve McQueen and a bunch of other notables. And I'm watching this sort of, you know, sort of taking a look at it from the standpoint of, gee, you know, okay, well, we're heading towards 9/11, 10th anniversary and so forth. And what these people went through, and it was like some of them, they took the challenge on and they made things happen that helped people. Then there were others that took things into their own hands and made things even worse for themselves and others. And I think there's a phrase that constantly is used, and especially in documentaries about historical events, and this event changed the course of history.
Right.
And I'm going, what do you mean changed? Did you know which direction history was supposed to go until this happened? How do we know that this event wasn't supposed to happen, whether it was 9/11, World War II, the Wright brothers, you know, whatever the event is that you want to talk about, the shuttles going orbiting the Earth and the new international space? How do we know that those changed the course of history? You knew what it was.
Well, you know, when you say the course, when you can actually see what a course somebody is on that they think they are. Like, that's the other thing, is that's a really myopic statement, change the course of history, because most of the time when things happen, it's because you don't know that you're heading into something difficult.
Right.
And it's that, in fact, this is the course of history. So change the course of the history that you would like to have happened, you know, and I don't know, you know, things, I don't know.
You used the terms, or you talked earlier about how our words are nothing more than a verbal expression, an auditory expression of all of the images.
That's right.
That we have in our minds, in our imaginations, and so forth.
Or an attempt to, because it's actually, I think language is a limiting manner of expressing. It's an important manner to express our thoughts, feelings, and beliefs. But imagery gives you a much more layered and more deeper, evocative representation of what it is that you're trying to express.
That's where telepathy would come in really handy right now.
The map.
Mm-hmm. When we talk about drawing our map, and I mentioned at the beginning of the program about legends on maps that show the various characters and symbols and so forth to signify roadways and trees and highways and restaurants and whatever other things that you want to have there. These are kinds of things that when we talk about our map, as in your book, The Map, those are things that you could put further down the road from where you are and when you are, as far as your dreams, your desires, the things that you want in your life.
Yeah, because you are also a map creator.
Right.
You know, you are a map creator. And so, yes, I mean, you can also, the difference between this kind of a map and a map that's on a two-dimensional piece of paper is the fact that we can actually create an entire country.
Yeah.
You know, with our thoughts and our desires and our feelings and our beliefs and be in it now, because of the power of the imagination that we are gifted with. We can choose in the now to be in this place, even if it is to change the way we feel about something temporarily so that we can live in a different place.
Yeah. And we can all collectively choose to shift the electromagnetic energies, as you spoke of earlier, to have a very peaceful and, again, we know that things go in cycles. There's hills and valleys all over the place and in our lives.
Yeah. And hopefully we're all getting to a hill now. You know, this weekend is a really poignant weekend. I love living here. I love America. I love Americans. I'm Canadian, but I love the mentality here. I love that what this country was, you know, formed on, you know, and I love that, you know, I think that there's an indomitable spirit in Americans that, you know, I think that with this anniversary weekend that I'm very grateful to be on your show on, you know, I think that this coming together and remembering and not wanting things to be the same way again. And I think that, I think there's something beautiful in everybody right now that's getting ignited, and I think that's just happening.
We can create it, and we want to thank you so much, Colette Baron-Reed, for joining us and sharing with us yourself and your book, The Map, Finding Magic and Meaning in the Story of Your Life. And we hope that you have a wonderful weekend, and we look forward to talking to you again very soon.
Thank you. It was a pleasure being here.
Thank you. And I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I hope that you will join us next Saturday and every Saturday, 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time, as we come your way. And also go to richarddugan.com, the archives page, the radio shows page. You can listen to these programs again and again if you'd like. Until next Saturday at the same time, love to Lal.